And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at the studios, the new studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 1013 www.freakradio.org. On Thursday, June 16th, I want to advise you to have a pencil and paper handy because you might just want to take down the names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, any information you might need to take action. Let's start with announcements. The Earth First Rendezvous is going to take place in the Great Lakes Basin this summer. Members of MyCats have joined forces with our friends Fen Valley Earth First to help organize the 2016 Earth First Round River Rendezvous to be held June 29th through the 7th in Manistee National Forest in Michigan. You want to watch a sunset over an endless body of fresh water on top of a sand dune? Well, you consider the conversations, workshops, and experiences of an Earth First Round River Rendezvous. Well, that's going to happen. The 37th annual Round River Rendezvous is being organized, and these folks have been hard at work gleaning, organizing, scouting, and strengthening friendships in preparation for the rendezvous. They am going to be on traditional Anishinaabeg land. The site will have walkable swimming, diving, boating, potable water, Seeds of Peach kitchen, limited cell phone reception, and bathroom options. The rendezvous is family friendly, and camping is only a short 15-minute walk from the parking lot. And they're looking for a gear library. If you've got extra gear, you can help other people who don't have camping gear. Let them know. There's going to be somewhere to drink. They don't know where that'll be, but they'll figure it out. There will be Mad Trans Women's Action camps, people of color, sober and family camps, and don't forget that all-important quiet camp. Please do not bring your dogs. Your dog's probably nice, but we don't want to meet them, and they don't want to mess with the wildlife. If you have conflict mediation experience and are interested in survivor-centric solutions and harm reduction, think about joining our conflict mediation team. And that goes for first aid people, wilderness first responders, medical bodywork, herbal healing skills. They're all needed on the medic team. If you're interested in water purification, cooking for large groups, digging shitters, setting up tarps, etc., join the logistics team. And if you're a child at heart and you get along well with kids, why don't you help plan day activities for the younger activists in the movement? All these things and more will be at the Round River Rendezvous 2016. If you want more information, send an email to rrr2016@riseup.net. That's rrr2016@riseup.net, and they'll get back to you. If you want other information, you might try going to the earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Today we learned that four more buffalo have been sent to slaughter. These buffalo are part of a group of yearlings that have been held since the end of February, awaiting approval of Yellowstone's 50-year quarantine plan. When first captured, Yellowstone held 57 calves. In May, the Park Service reported that four of these calves had been sent to slaughter after blood testing positive for exposure to brucellosis during another round of tests. 53 remained, but today we learned that another four have blood tested positive and have been taken to the slaughterhouse by the Intertribal Buffalo Council. The stress of confinement, being orphaned, being ripped from their families, and being tormented by humans can trigger the activation of brucellosis, and positive blood tests don't even mean that they're infected, only that they've been exposed, and it's more than likely a false positive results mean that they developed antibodies. There are now 49 calves remaining in the trap, destined for either slaughter or life in Buffalo prison. Yellowstone said they still don't have any idea when they'll make a decision about quarantine. Quarantine is not a solution to slaughter. It's a tool designed to control and kill the wild and free. Quarantine is also based on the premise that wild buffalo pose a brucellosis risk to livestock, something that is untrue. We have said it for years, and it has been confirmed by science, that elk and the unnatural feeding grounds where high concentrations of elk are fed pose the greatest brucellosis threat to cattle. We can take that even further to say that cattle are the cause of the brucellosis threat. Cattle brought this invasive disease with them when they were brought into this country, and they and their human manipulators have put this disease into our wildlife populations. Brucellosis doesn't harm wildlife outside of livestock producers and politicians who use it as a scare tactic to control and manipulate the wild. Brucellosis has also been recently removed from the federal list of bioterror agents, where it never belonged in the first place. So now scientists can freely develop a vaccine that works on cattle and use it on them. Better yet, cattle should be removed from the entirety of the greater Yellowstone region. But in the meantime, 49 young buffalo remain captive inside Yellowstone's Stevens Creek buffalo trap, awaiting execution or a life sentence as livestock. The debate is over, but only for now. Buffalo are not allowed to access any of their habitats south of the Madison River, west of the Yellowstone National Park. Montana Governor Steve Bullock's legal team has thrown a bone to the Montana Department of Livestock, who were bored this spring, prevented from hazing wild buffalo. Buffalo maintained the victory of year-round access to habitat on Horse Butte and lands to the north, but this most recent interpretation of the government's decision fragments the buffalo's habitat, literally cutting in half the lands they choose to use when migrating into Montana's Hebgen Basin. One ranching family, the Povaz, is the cause for this. They are the only ones who bring cows into that corridor for a few summer months. This is the one cattle outfit in the entire Hebgen Basin insisting that buffalo be abused and killed for their benefit. Ironically, part of the year-round habitat the buffalo have reclaimed in Red Canyon has a patchwork of private lands that also run summer cows. Buffalo may be hazed off of that private property, but they are allowed in the area. What makes the Povaz so special? Fewer than four dozen buffalo and as many as half of the newborn calves remain around Horse Butte. The rest of the buffalo who spend the spring in the Hebgen Basin have all made their own choice and their own schedule to migrate east into Yellowstone to join up with other buffalo families before the rut. The buffalo prove once again that hazing was never necessary. Times are changing, and with buffalo gaining year-round habitat and the majority of residents celebrating, with the unsustainable nature of the livestock industry becoming more and more apparent, things are working in buffalo's favor. We'll continue to stand with them with your help in their defense, and we'll never stop until wild buffalo roam free all over this land. If you want more information and to contact the Buffalo Field Campaign, please go to their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And the Center for Biological Diversity is offering a $15,000 reward over a poached grizzly bear in Idaho. The center is contributing to the reward for information about the killing of a grizzly bear found dead over the weekend of June 4th in Idaho. To help bring the killer or killers to justice, the Center for Biological Diversity has offered a $5,000 reward. Adding to $5,000 from the Fish and Wildlife Service, $5,000 from the Humane Society of the United States and the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, and $600 from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game Citizens Against Poaching Program. The illegal killing of any wildlife is appalling, said the center's Andrea Santarcer. But this particular incident is even more tragic because this bear was killed in the heart of a wildlife corridor connecting central Idaho and Yellowstone, which is important to the healthy, sustainable bear populations in both areas. The service's recent proposal to strip federal protections from Yellowstone bears makes it all but certain that other bears traveling through the centennials will face the same fate as this bear. The Center for Biological Diversity filed a petition with the Fish and Wildlife Service to reintroduce bears to the area in December of 2014, but the Fish and Wildlife Service hasn't yet produced a meaningful response. And for more information, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org. And Zambia halts hippo culling after protests by animal rights activists in this story by Chris Mafula, editing by James Macaria, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Zambian wildlife authorities said on Tuesday they had suspended the controlled slaughter of up to 2,000 hippos over the next 5 years following concerns from animal rights activists who described it as trophy hunting. Zambia's Department of National Parks and Wildlife said it started the hippo culling after new research showed that water levels in the Longwa River were low and insufficient to support the hippo population, especially in the dry season. Zambia has between 42 and 50,000 hippos, a population the Department of National Parks and Wildlife says cannot be supported by the water levels in the Lungwa Valley, where most of the animals are located. British wildlife charity Born Free said on its website that the scientific rationale for killing up to 2,000 hippos when their population in the entire southern African region stood at 80,000 hippos was questionable. I urge the authorities to call a halt to the killing with immediate effect, Born Free president and co-founder Will Travels said in a post on the charity's website. Water levels in Zambia's rivers and lakes have dropped following a profound drought that threatens crops across southern African region, where the United Nations has warned that 14 million people face hunger. And from Finland, we receive news that the Animal Liberation Front has torched buses involved in a fur auction, causing over $1.5 million in damage in this story from Biteback, as found on the Earth First Newswire. ALF activists placed incendiary devices under the tires at a Poljalan Matka depot in Vantaa, Finland, during the night of June 9th. Five buses were completely destroyed and several others were damaged. The bus company reported damages of 1.5 million euros. Poljalan Matka has transported buyers to the Saga Furs auction house for many years. The Saga Furs American Legend Cooperative joint auction began on June 8th. In a claim of responsibility, the EVR, which is the Finnish translation for the Animal Liberation Front, wrote, "This is a message to those who still do not understand that participation in the exploitation of animals comes at a price. As long as you are involved in animal oppression, you will be our target. We recommend that Poljalan Matka and all others end cooperation with Saga Furs." And logs at an Oregon old-growth mill have been spiked in this story by SAP, as found on the Earth First Newswire. In the early morning hours of June 11th, we entered the Swanson Brothers Mill and placed dozens of metal spikes in the trunks of old-growth logs. The logs were also filled with smaller nails to prevent the use of metal detectors in removing the spikes. This mill in Noti, Oregon, was targeted because it specializes in processing the oldest and largest trees. This action was taken to stop production and is not intended to harm any worker at the mill. Less than 4% of America's native forests remain on the West Coast, yet private logging companies facilitated by government agencies continue to destroy these ancient ecosystems for a profit. Their greed and appetite know no limits, and the legal system has so far failed to stop this plunder. We refuse to see the earth reduced to clear cuts and tree farms. This action is an attack against a suicidal industry that it never has and never will respect life. We hope that this will inspire others in our bioregion to return to the front lines of the struggle, because if we don't stop soon, there will be nothing left to fight for. This action was dedicated to Marius Mason and all long-term anarchist prisoners. This action is further dedicated to all things that call this forest home. For the Wild, signed SAP. And indigenous peoples in Panama are using drones to fight deforestation. In this story by Anastasia Maloney of the news.trust.org, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Indigenous people in Panama are using drones as a new weapon to monitor deforestation on their lands as thousands of hectares disappear every year in one of the world's most biodiverse rainforests, the United Nations said. More than half of Panama is covered by tropical rainforest, home to various indigenous groups who rely on these forests to survive. The main objective of monitoring with drones is to identify changes in specific points of the forest cover, said UN Food and Agriculture Organization in a statement on Wednesday. The monitoring is carried out in areas under deforestation and degradation pressure, which are only observable with high-resolution spatial images. Indigenous people make up nearly 13% of Panama's population of 4 million, with about 200,000 living on autonomous tribal lands known as comarcas. These tools enable us to better know the forest characteristics and resources we have in our territories, Eliseo Quintero, a leader of the Ngabe Bugele tribe, said in a statement. Panama's indigenous groups for starting using drones to monitor their ancestral lands last year, the FAO said. The current FAO drone project began in February and is being carried out through the UN's Reducing Emissions from Deforestation and Forest Degradation Program, in partnership with Panama's Environment Ministry and the non-governmental Rainforest Foundation. The project focuses on seven ethnic tribes in Panama. Up to three representatives of each tribe, including women, are trained to use drones, download and interpret images, and produce detailed maps and collect data. The project's first drone flight was last month, the FAO said. Drones can be used year-round and can also help indigenous groups to monitor forest fires, crop harvests, and water resources, it said. Giving indigenous groups tools like drones to help them protect their forests is also one way to reduce carbon dioxide emissions caused by deforestation, the FAO added. For Panama's indigenous groups, like others in the world, forests are a key source of water and food. Panama loses about 20,000 hectares each year, that's about 50,000 acres, to deforestation, according to the National Association for the Conservation of Nature, a Panamanian nonprofit. Across Latin America and the Caribbean, nearly 2 million hectares of rainforest disappear every year, largely due to illegal logging. Since the 1980s, Panama has introduced legislation to protect indigenous rights and lands, including a 2008 law that gives indigenous communities living outside the comarcas the right to request official recognition of their lands. Still, the report said swaths of indigenous lands have been lost, taken over by hydroelectric dam projects, private mining companies, and cattle ranchers, and destroyed by illegal loggers who cut down precious timber, such as redwood and mahogany. And turning to bird news, the Bureau of Land Management plan threatens marbled murrelet, spotted owl, and the Northwest Forest Plan. The Bureau of Land Management is proposing a final forest plan for the forests it manages in Oregon that weakens existing protections for the threatened marbled murrelet and the northern spotted owl. These protections were put in place in 1995 as part of President Clinton's Northwest Forest Plan. American Bird Conservancy has submitted a letter to the Bureau of Land Management and is urging the Obama administration officials to shelve the proposed plan and to keep the Northwest Forest Plan in effect until it can be updated next year in conjunction with the Forest Service. The marbled murrelet is an endangered species being placed at great risk by the BLM's plan to increase logging in mature forests, said Steve Holmer, ABC's senior policy advisor. The Northwest Forest Plan provided for half-mile buffers needed to mitigate for the heavily fragmented landscape. This common-sense safeguard must be retained. Conservation groups are objecting to the Bureau of Land Management's final environmental impact statement and resource management plans for Western Oregon, FEIS, because the plan appears to violate national environmental laws and departs from the Northwest Forest Plan. Groups are recommending that the Obama administration not finalize the plan and instead ask the Bureau of Land Management to work with the Forest Service to develop a regional EIS that retains and builds upon the fundamental principles of the Northwest Forest Plan. And a new rider is threatening the greater sage grouse. The American Bird Conservancy strongly supports existing regional grouse conservation plans as well as follow-up policies to the administration's planning initiative, including the proposed 10 million acre mineral withdrawal, prioritized grazing permit renewal for sagebrush focal areas, public disclosure of soft and hard trigger reviews, and application of no net loss mitigation policies. However, legislative writers threaten to exempt greater sage grouse from the Endangered Species Act protection or to overturn the federal management plans. The House passed a National Defense Authorization Act, which would exempt the grouse from ESA for 10 years and overturn the regional conservation plans. The House Interior Committee bill also includes another one-year exemption to ESA for listing the grouse. Adding to our concern is an aggressive litigation campaign by local interests that seeks to do away with these plans. If these lawsuits against the government are successful, the greater sage grouse would be without any meaningful protection as a result of the moratorium on Endangered Species Act listing that has been in effect for the last 2 years and is again being proposed by the House. It is essential that the Endangered Species Act be restored for greater sage grouse to keep management plans in place and that individual species not be exempted from the law. ABC is closely monitoring the situation in Congress and will keep you informed on opportunities to have your voice make a difference. For further information and to take action, go to www.abcbirds.org. And Noah's Ark gone awry in this story by Jan Lundberg of the Sail Transport Network. Transport by sea carries about 90% of the world's trade. Consumerism is fueled by vast choices, sometimes very selfish ones. Smugglers often push not the inanimate contraband, but also wildlife in whole or in their parts by sea transit. As our readers also know, today's dirty bunker fuel-powered cargo ships are able to supply massive cargo capacity due in part to a web of oil subsidies and lax regulations concerning the pollution of air and seas, as well as flags of convenience loopholes. But the illegal trafficking of wildlife and shipping as a transit source for the trafficking is starting to get the attention it needs. Sail Transport Network and Sail MED share a mission of ensuring responsible shipping in all areas that affect wildlife, the seas, our air quality, and health. So we created this article for your interest. The United Nations kicked off on June 6, 2016 at its New York headquarters the first World Wildlife Crime Report, Trafficking in Protected Species. It draws upon primary data to create an alarming overview and analysis of the global trafficking in flora and fauna. Along with elephants, one is killed every 15 minutes by poachers. Nearly 7,000 different species have been accounted for in more than 164,000 seizures affecting 120 countries. Representatives from Gabon to Germany, Kazakhstan, Colombia, Italy, Interpol, Sri Lanka, Kenya, and many others gathered at the United Nations in New York to launch the report and speak up against illegal trafficking in wildlife. The problem spans across the world's greedy consumption habits in more ways than we might have assumed. It isn't just ivory chess pieces and reptile handbags that are causing killings. The demand is fueled by many unnecessary and trophy consumption habits for certain kinds of seafood, pets, zoos, breeding, food, medicine, tonics, art, decor, and jewelry, cosmetics, perfume, fashion, and furniture. The report helps to elucidate how widespread the problem is. From fashion to furniture, food to pets, the products of wildlife and forest crime may be hidden in plain sight, part of our everyday lives all over the world. We are all potentially complicit, and we all share the responsibility to act when we can. The UN report also explains that virtually every country in the world plays a role. On the criminal side, suspected traffickers of some 80 nationalities have been identified, illustrating the fact that wildlife crime is truly a global issue. Trafficking in protected wildlife has become highly lucrative. The trade is only exceeded in value by the illegal market for drugs, arms, and trafficked human beings, and generates as much as $20 billion in illegal profits, profits used to fund organized crime networks and non-state armed groups, states the 2015 International Marine Organization report. The list of illegally trafficked species generated by the report sits in the World Wildlife Seizure Database to help countries share information. The database, however, is not yet comprehensive. This is because it draws on seizure records obtained from actions carried out pursuant to the Convention on the International Trade of Endangered Species of Wildlife, Fauna, and Flora, or CITES. For various reasons, CITES does not contain all species trafficked, nor does it protect against certain crimes against wildlife. For example, poaching and illegal domestic trade of protected species does not fall within the scope of CITES. The report also explains some of the other loopholes in international conventions and state laws, which also allow traffickers to deal in wildlife. For example, countries generally do not recognize other countries' laws on illegal harvesting and poaching of wildlife. Illegally acquired wildlife can be legally traded in most countries of the world, and there is also the problem of false provenance. Where exactly did that shipment of rosewood come from? Illegal trafficking in wildlife has devastating, far-reaching effects. Local populations are losing wildlife, cultural heritage, local resources, income sources from tourism, stability in their villages, forest and land resources, and also loved ones, as wildlife trafficking results in related killings. And if you want to read more about this story, please go to www.sailtransportnetwork.org. Lawsuit challenges Wildlife Service's wolf killing in Idaho. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services program killed more than 70 wolves in Idaho last year using all manner of gruesome methods, including foothold traps, wires, snares that strangle, and aerial gunners in helicopters. Sometimes government agents will even use planes or helicopters to run wolves to exhaustion before shooting them from the air, often leaving them wounded to die slow, painful deaths. This has to stop. The center and its allies have sued the Wildlife Services over its wolf-killing campaign, which relies on outdated analyses, incomplete science, and a failure to consider whether livestock owners take common-sense measures to avoid conflicts with wolves before kill orders are issued. We're calling on Wildlife Services to halt all wolf killing until it prepares an updated environmental analysis of the Idaho program. Wildlife Services has killed hundreds of Idaho's wolves over the years and has never even bothered to consider how much mortality a wolf population can handle, said the center's Andrea Santarcier. Legal fight targets wildlife killing contract in California. The Center for Biological Diversities and their allies have filed a lawsuit in California challenging Monterey County's contract renewal with Wildlife Services, the federal government's notorious wildlife killing program that has killed more than 3,000 coyotes, bobcats, mountain lions, and other animals in the county in the past 5 years. The county failed to conduct an environmental analysis or obtain public comment before authorizing Wildlife Services' use of traps and snares in the sensitive Monterey ecosystem. Californians should be aware their tax dollars are funding this harmful, indiscriminate wildlife killing program, said Center for Biological Attorney Colette Adkins. We hope our lawsuit spurs Monterey County to realize that people value wildlife and this business as usual killing is no longer acceptable. And the EPA has said atrazine is likely harming most U.S. species. The amount of the herbicide atrazine that's released into the environment in the United States is likely harming most species of plants and animals, including mammals, birds, amphibians, and reptiles, according to a new risk assessment from the Environmental Protection Agency. Atrazine is also well known as a hormone disruptor that has been linked to birth defects and cancer in humans and contamination of ground, surface, and drinking water supplies. About 70 million pounds of atrazine were used in the United States each year, making it one of the most widely used pesticides in the country. Anyone who cares about wildlife, people, and the environment should be deeply troubled by this finding, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Nathan Donnelly. And if you'd like more information, please visit their website at www.biologicaldiversity.org. And now we truly have run out of time for the Earth First Update. As I mentioned before, the Earth First Update is aired on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org at 9 p.m. on Thursday. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast, please tune in tomorrow, Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. If you are in Moscow, Idaho, and that region, tune in to KRFP, Free Radio Moscow, Idaho, at 90.3 FM at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays for the Earth First Update. Truth and Justice Radio, broadcasting on WZBC in Boston, Massachusetts, also on 90.3 FM, broadcasts the Earth First Update between 6 and 10 a.m. on Sundays. And you could also tune in to the Grateful Dread Public Radio, that's an internet radio station, on Sunday mornings at 2 a.m. Tune in to gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org. And you can find them on TuneIn and Spotify. And you could always go to radio4all.net. That's the radio number 4all.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It's free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.